It's the True Faith Podcast. I'm Alex Hurst, joined today on this happy day by Simon Campbell sat next to me and Norman Riley on the line from London. And we're here to talk to you about Newcastle United's absolutely fucking massive 1-0 win against Huddersfield Town. And lads,
it's a
fucking good job, isn't it, that David Wagner knew the fans, knew the city, knew the stadium and knew the team. Otherwise, they would have got beat, wouldn't they? So, advantage Huddersfield going into this one. So, yeah, well done, David. Really pleased for you on that one. just wanted to get that in the start of the show. Simon, let's just start with you first. How are you feeling about all of this?
A little bit overwhelmed. I mean, it's been a long, long season. And every single game since about January has been utterly enjoyable. I mean, even yesterday's, it wasn't a footballing spectacle. And we talked about it as the match day went on. Like, Huddersfield weren't really trying to play football, but I just enjoyed it. You can't underestimate the feeling that a win with Rafa Benitez as manager gives you. I mean, we've talked about it for years. Like, winning football matches is why we do it, but it's totally different with Rafa. It's 10 times better. Every victory just feels like everyone on the pitch, everyone in the dugout, everyone in the crowd deserves it, and it's well earned. And it just gives you that feeling of absolute euphoria. It's fantastic.
Fantastic's the word, and we're going to talk about absolutely everything today. All I want to do is talk about football at the moment, which is what winning massive games of football does for you. Norman, you're on the line. You had a good day yesterday. What was it like for you travelling back? Just you pretty much did the day trip. It's almost like an away game for you. 3.5 hour journey up before the game, 3.5 hour journey back straight after. Tell us a little bit about your day and how you're feeling, Norm.
Well, I'll tell you how I'm feeling. I'm feeling like just somebody's put my brain in a fucking Nutri bullet and just blended it and then poured it back into my ears. I'm absolutely hungover to death. And the reason for that is because yesterday was just, it was such a brilliant day. The result, we all knew this, we all said it repeatedly after the Southampton match. Beat Huddersfield and we're as good as done. The kind of enormity of the win, it's the wrong words to describe it. It was just a huge victory. So important, and like you said there, Wagner trying to sort of, you know, be clever psychologically before the match. It's almost like, why are you wasting your time saying that kind of shit when you're facing like a manager like Rafa Benitez who does not give a flying shit about any of that? It was just absolutely perfect in every way. I mean, I'm sure we'll go into the game, but like Simon said, just watching a team that is so well-drilled tactically is an absolute pleasure. It just goes to show you it's not all the bullshit media myth about Newcastle fans rather losing 4-3 than winning 1-0. Absolute horseshite. Give me yesterday's like tactical masterclass from Rafa anytime. Just a brilliant, brilliant day, mate. Absolutely brilliant.
Yes, it was. And it's almost kind of getting not boring saying this, but we're certainly repeating ourselves that we just turn up in the big games when it matters. And that is the opposite of Newcastle United in, well, for, you know, go back as many years as you want pre-Rafa Benitez, even going back to the Pardew season finishing fifth when push really came to shove at the end of that season, we couldn't do it when it mattered getting beat 4-0 at Wigan. You look at these games now against Man United in the relegation zone, Southampton, massive game, Huddersfield, massive game. We haven't conceded a goal. We haven't even looked like conceding a goal, actually. I know Man United, that's probably pushing it a little bit. But certainly against Southampton and Huddersfield yesterday, Dubravka's not had to make a save in either game. And he is world-class still, and he's had a fantastic impact. But, Si, do you think that there's something about this team which raises its game for the occasion, or do you think that actually, no, this is just the culmination of a season-long worth of training ground graft application, and that it doesn't matter who we play at the moment or how big the game is, we'll go and put in like a similar performance at Leicester next week?
I think it's a bit of both. So at the start of the season, on paper, I think when we did our predictions for the season, we were talking about 50 points. We thought this team was capable of 50 points, and actually on current form, if we hadn't had such a bad run before Christmas, we'd be sitting tidy on mid 40 points by now. We've had a lot of bad luck along the way.
We hadn't lost all them games.
Yeah, so
we'd be fine.
You know, if Rafa had just been given the players he wanted in the summer, which was Kennedy and a goalkeeper, would be flying. And you know, we had injuries to Lascelles and that along the way. So I think this is just what this team is capable of, and we're finally seeing it after some really bad luck. And you know, just I don't think I think it is part of how the season's gone. You know, we're we've put ourselves in a situation where the big games have meant more. You know, if we'd been sitting on 40 points a few weeks ago, these wouldn't be big games, but I feel like we'd still be winning them. So it's a bit of both. It's a bit of both. We've pulled out when it matters, as we have done the whole time he's been here. But nah, this is just what the squad's capable of for me.
If you look at the stats for Lascelles out of the team and in the team, we average 1.54 points a game. And I know it's if buts and maybes, but if he hadn't missed that 9-game spell, if you worked out the points average across the season, would be level on points with Arsenal before today's game on 48 points. So it tells you a little bit about how good the team has been in recent weeks and how good we were at the start of the season, even though we did enjoy that difficult start, Si.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have to rein it in a little bit. We're still talking about a side that is performing way, way better than the sum of its parts. You know, we're not saying these players are a top half the table team. Like, most of these lads still wouldn't get in a team in the top 8, top 9. This is just Rafa. Rafa's team, well-drilled, tactically perfect. And yesterday was just another example of how having him as manager and having the kind of players that he's put together into a team makes all the difference.
And it is. We're talking about what is essentially a scrappy, rainy, wet 1-0 win against a very, very poor side who didn't come to play football. It was essentially a training session at times, attack versus defence. But Norman, you left me and the lads some voice messages last night on your way home, articulating your love of this group of lads and your love of this season. So now you've had a chance to sleep on it. You know, would you like to echo those thoughts?
I would just like to say that I've got no recollection of leaving those messages, so apologies for if I swore and I offended anyone with me. I mean, the feeling's the same. The feeling has been like this all season. I've kind of all along been thinking, you know, that the team is performing great in the sum of its parts, but you know what? Maybe it's not. I mean, the reality is you've got Eliasu, who have obviously got, you know, natural ability. That's why they made it as professional footballers. What's happened is they're just responding to outstanding coaching. They're listening to everything that they're being told. They're following orders on the pitch. It's quite obvious to see. And above and beyond anything else, for me, what I love about them is the desire, just the fucking care. Every single one of them cares. The team spirit. I've never, God, I mean, I've been watching Newcastle since, you know, like the kind of mid to late 80s. And I've never seen a group of players, a collective unit. I'm talking like all 11 on the pitch, everyone on the bench, like genuinely kind of, they genuinely seem to like each other and want to do well, not just for themselves, but for the team as a whole. And it's so good. It's just so fucking good. Watch, like yesterday, like you said, Alex, you know, I mean, I think we mentioned it a couple of times during the game. It did feel like a training session. In the back of your mind, you're always thinking, well, you know, the Bournemouth game was the one that kept sort of coming to, you know, the front of my mind. But two things, what I was feeling when you as good as Bournemouth, but also we have grown so much since then. Since that Bournemouth game, the team have just learned a lot of lessons, and that's just so much better for me. And again, it's another common thread from the season is that we said, this battle this season out there, the players have fought, if we survive, which we're obviously going to now, will stand them in massively good stead for next season. And every single player on that squad has progressed as a footballer, and I don't think you can really see anything, you know, there's no kind of hierarchy than saying that every single one of them has improved as a player this season, and it's just a fucking absolute pleasure to watch. And being there yesterday was, again, like you say, a scrappy 1-0 win at home, Huddersfield, but it was up there with me, like, you know, some of my favourite moments watching Newcastle United, and that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with the learning point. We always know with Rafa that, you know, for all the defeats we had in October, November, December time, we'd learn something from everyone. Learning is the key word. Whenever we lose a game, you know that there'll be changes made to the way certain players have behaved or certain things have happened that'll make us better. So we talked about mistakes. Pretty much all those games we lost in that run-up were decided by one or two mistakes. They're all close. We never got hammered. And you know that, like, we've had nil-nils against Brighton, we've had nil-nils against Swansea. This is the Premier League, and these players are kind of adjusting to this newly evolved, albeit a little bit shit, Premier League, where the bottom teams have to play like this to try and take points off each other. And, you know, these last few weeks we've learned how to take advantage of that, and it was so beautiful yesterday that in another game where one team's trying to stop it from being a game of football and then nick it in the last 10 minutes, we've said, nah, fuck off, lads. 80 minutes of patheticness, and then we've just gone, well, we'll have the late goal. You know what? You're going to open up in after 80 minutes and try and nick the game. We'll have it now. You know, you sit there and try and shut the game down for as long as possible. And we've been the victim of that in quite a few games this season. But to see it turned around because we've learned how to do it over the course of the season was just fantastic.
Yeah, I just want to come on something Norman said there about the effort and application of these lads. Watching the highlights package on Sky Sports on demand, I was able to have a look at that chance that Huddersfield had. I mean, it wasn't really a chance, but it was the one kind of moment they had in the first half where the ball wasn't cleared off the line, but it was played across the box. And that came from our set piece, and their keeper punches the ball, and Yedlin kind of really carelessly, had a good game yesterday, Yedlin, but the one really careless moment, he loses the ball high up the pitch, and Huddersfield are in. And at that point, I froze the screen. Huddersfield are 3-on-3. There is Paul Dummett, Mo Diame, and Jonjo Shelvey, and three of their attackers against us three. The lad gets past Paul Dummett pretty easily, and he's through. 5 seconds later, we've got eight lads back. 5 seconds later. Now, our lads, our two centre-backs, and our attacking players are level. They're in the box with the Huddersfield lads, waiting for Yedlin to redeliver that ball. 5 seconds later, we have more men back, and their attack should fizzle out. They're getting an outrageous stroke of fortune when Shelvey and Kennedy kind of get caught square, but they try to put the ball in, and it bounces to their lad, and Lejeune clears it. But that's just something that we wouldn't have seen in previous years. It would have been, and listen, you know, I love him to bits, but even Wormusa probably wouldn't have been busting a gut to get back. And other players, and Wijnaldum, and all the players from the past. So the absolute sheer effort and determination to protect the goal, not to concede and win that game, is just, it's a pleasure to watch. And you know what, at times to some people it might look like difficult watching. I mean, I thought we were magnificent first half, but we kind of lost our way a little bit second half before the subs were made. So, Si, let's talk about the subs. You know, a few eyebrows raised, Richie coming off, and then even Gale coming off for Slimani. You mean you've got to say that the goal was essentially Atsu with a good ball, finding Slimani with a good run. So good subs for you. And let's not forget, I know this is a long question, let's not forget that Rafa has been criticised quite a lot for substitutions this season by sections of the fan base.
Well, yeah, you know what? When we saw Christian Atsu warming up instead of Slimani, we thought, what's he going to do here? Who comes off? Because I thought Kennedy and Richie were both having perfectly good games. And then Richie makes way. And you know what? What you've just talked about there was the attitude of the players who would bust a gut to get back, run 80 yards when we lose the ball. Richie's the absolute pinnacle of one of those players. He's the absolute definition of a player who will graft well beyond his actual ability as a football player for you. And he put in a great shift, but he's probably knackered after 70 minutes. We've noticed that over the years that we needed a goal, and Richie was still working hard, but why not just put someone new on? And you know what, I've been quite critical of Christian Atsu this season because I don't think his end product has been brilliant, but he came on and he really did change the game going forward. You know, he tried a few things, he lost the ball, but it was just a new demo. It was nice to have these players available now with no pressure on them, coming on at 0-0, not coming on 2-0 down to try and salvage the game, coming on at 0-0 to make a difference and to take the points. And yeah, we raised eyebrows at Atsu because everyone was kind of looking, well, where's Slimani? Is he actually going to play? But then 5 minutes later, he did come on. And you know what? The game did change. I don't think overall we were performing any better, but we just had fresh legs. That's what subs should be for. It shouldn't be about trying to affect a game where it's got away from us. It was about, we've worked really hard for 70 minutes. We haven't quite got the goal. Here's the fresh legs. This should see out the job, and it did. So fair play, Rafa. He played it absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, Norman, same to you. Let's talk about Slimani a little bit. I know you're very excited about the new song in Block V that some lads and lasses were belting out. I mean, you can give the listeners a rendition if you want, but also keen to hear your thoughts on his impact yesterday, because I know standing next year, you were very, very keen on what you saw.
I mean, the song, I'm not going to sing it because, you know, my voice is enough to fucking shatter, like, windows for, like, this whole street. but it's Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody, but I Want to Dance with Slimani, and it just fucking killed us. I mean, even thinking about it now, I'm probably going to start, like, laughing because it is fucking genius. Whoever came up with it, kudos, superb. But his performance, I mean, what he did when he came on, you know, you bring on, like, a player who... He scored a lot of goals in the Portuguese league. And look, I mean, you know, we know the Portuguese league isn't the strongest, but Porto, Benfica, Sporting Lisbon always do really well, and he was banging goals in. And Leicester paid 30 million for him. He's no fucking mug. You know, he's obviously got talent, and he was excellent for Algeria at the World Cup. And I was really excited when we signed him, and it's just been unfortunate that he's obviously been injured for most of the time he's been here. But the difference when he came on, and this isn't taking anything away from Gale, by the way, because Gale does what he does, and he worked his arse off yesterday. I mean, the graft he put in was phenomenal. But Slimani coming on, he just completely unsettled their centre-halves. And his presence disrupting them. It opened up space, and the substitutions were, and we did say, like Simon said there, at the time that happened, we were kind of quizzing them, you know, we were a little bit puzzled, but it just goes to show what we know absolutely fuck all, you know. I mean, Rafa did it, made the changes, and they completely changed the game. And what I like about it as well is going one up with someone like Slimani up front, with 10 minutes to go, and you just know that he's an outlet. He's an outlet when the other team's supposedly going to be putting pressure on you. They put such little pressure on us. I don't know if you lads have seen Match of the Day, but basically the Perez goal went in on Match of the Day, and then that was it. They just ended it because they did nothing in the last 10 minutes. We absolutely saw the game out, and I just think obviously he's not available against Leicester, but the last sort of 4 or 5 games of the season, I think he's really got a part to play. And I think again, it's one of those where you look at him, Kennedy and Dubravka, and you just think, if Rafa had been given these players in pre-season, the players that he wanted, the players that he kicked off about because he didn't get, we would be where Burnley are. I don't doubt it.
Yeah, and great point on Slimani. His first involvement as a Newcastle player was getting in behind the defence on the end of a brilliant Shelvey ball, and chesting it away. The keeper kind of didn't know whether to come or whether to go. So for all his physicality, really helped us in the second half, particularly seeing out the game, and he held up the ball well. And Huddersfield's defenders didn't really know what to make of him. I don't think they expected or planned him to play. He's got that turn of pace and that ability to kind of play in between the lines, which Dwight Gale's so good at. So he really does look like the all-round player, albeit we only saw him for kind of 15, 20 minutes. And then if you look at the goal itself, lads, I think if Gale's on the end of that cross, because the cross is probably going over Slimani's head, I think. I mean, it's hard to judge it. It was at the other end of the pitch to us and seen the highlights, but it's probably going over Gale's head. But the fact that Slimani's there, he's so good in the air, he's obviously much taller, forces the keeper into that error. And it is a goalkeeping error, because you know, if you're a goalkeeper and you're handling the ball in the box, you don't pat it down. But moving on, Si, to Ayoze Perez, I'll get your thoughts on Perez as well. Norm, we'll get yours first, Si. The goal, there's actually 5 Huddersfield players back, and we've got 2 lads. 2 things which stood out for me. Number one, Slimani, very smart, because he's actually behind the line when we score. Now, the defender pushes up when Perez puts it in, and he stood on the line. It's offside. I don't think people... Well, I've not seen that mentioned yet, unless I'm, you know, looking into nothing. But I just thought Slimani makes a very deliberate decision to stay behind the goal line so he can't be offside. So that was really smart. And also the fact that, you know, there's 5 players back, and if you kind of... You know, it looks easy. The finish, I mean... We were pissed. So you can't see that far. It was a muggy day, but basically in the ground, didn't know what had happened. The ball just went in and it was absolute...
Are you trying to blame fog for the fact that you couldn't see the game?
So basically I couldn't... Live, I just saw the ball hit the back of the net, and it was just absolute chaos in Block V. Severe chaos. Like, people were rows and rows in front.
I mean, the main thing about that goal for me, which I did see, there was no fog.
Let me finish your question. Is that it looks easy on the replay because it looks like a simple pass, but when you're Kennedy and you've got 2 defenders and a goalkeeper and a whole fucking massive goal in front of you, it must have been so easy for him to just try a shot, get blocked. Yeah. Oh, well done, Kennedy corner. But what a pass.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, if it was me, I would have shot. The ball's dropped your feet in the 6-yard box, and if you smash it, there's a good chance it goes in anyway. There's players everywhere. It could hit off a player, but... To have that, because Perez is almost behind him, to have him in the peripheral of your vision, right in the corner of your eye there, and to pick out that pass perfectly and just make it so easy for Perez to score. Perez doesn't have to do anything. By the time it's gone to him, the keeper's made a move, and he's just got to pick out that part of the net where there's a big gap. And I think that's where Slimani's like stood in the goal, probably pointing, saying, kick it here. And it was just, I've got so much credit for Kennedy, because I wouldn't have been able to pass that ball there.
I just want to... Charlotte was supposed to be hosting today's podcast, but she has called in sick. with a bad voice, you can't speak. It's too much grief in the ref probably at the match yesterday because the ref was shite. But no, seriously, she was going to, but she's asked me to say that she's very excited about Slimani and he looked like he can bring a lot to the team. So thanks, Charlotte. Broadly agreeing with what we're saying.
Yes.
You look like you're going to say something there, Si. more from Charlotte later. She's passed on notes. She'll be back this week with the Exile Show for patrons and plenty of other shows this week for patrons, of course. Link in the description of the podcast and on our social media if you want to sign up for more of this kind of stuff. Norman, let's talk a little bit about Iosé Perez because I'm thinking straight away the goal at Stoke and the goal at Huddersfield are like season-defining goals for Newcastle United. Six massive, massive points and he was there in the right place at the right time with good finishes on both occasions. So let's just have your opinion on Perez's contribution as a whole this season and also yesterday.
Yesterday he was he gave the perfect performance. His passing was fucking unbelievable. His movement was fantastic. He used his lower body because he's short, but he's short, but he's very stocky, and he used his lower body strength yesterday to hold up the ball, to hold players off, to lay it off. The goal itself, I mean, he's the person who originally fucking lays the ball off in the middle of the pitch, and he just steams up, and he's on the end of it. The Kennedy pass, by the way, was out fucking rages. No two ways about it. You've already mentioned it, Si, but the composure that he showed at that stage of the game in such a high pressured match just to do that, it's just indicative of how fucking good he is and how much potential he's got. And a great finish by Perez, but we could easily just focus on how Perez was yesterday, but for all of the grief that he's had, I mean, you know, probably for two full seasons now, you could say, really. He's been getting grief. He's not like I still don't see him as a number 10, which is odd because you almost think like, what is his actual position? Like, what's his best position? But he is growing into that role and he's become an integral part of this side. And he's just been brilliant. The whole team have been brilliant since the West Ham match, where really bar a couple of poor performances like Swansea and Brighton. But Perez has just been absolutely fantastic. He's made the role he's done it, and he's obviously, again, it's a confidence thing. He just looks so fucking confident. I mean, yesterday, I don't know if any of you have seen his interview on Match of the Day after the game last night, and he just comes across as being somebody who kind of knows that they're either at the top of the game or they're getting to that level, and there's a determination for him to kick on. I mean, when we first signed him, we were all impressed with him, but then he had 2 or 3 years of Carver, Pardew and McLaren. You know, that's going to set any fucking player back, regardless of your potential. And I think it's probably taken a long time to kind of rinse that piss-poor coaching at such an early age out of his system. And now we're starting to see the benefits of him, having had nearly just over 2 years under Benitez and his coaching staff. And it's great to see he's been huge. He's been absolutely huge this season, and fucking good on him.
I thought he was a bit shy yesterday. But let me put that in context. So when Slimani was getting warmed up to come on and was stripping on, me and Ben looked at each other and said, well, he's got to take Perez off here. Can't take Gale off. He's playing class. And Perez has, he'd just done that thing where I think Atsu had put a cross in, and Perez, instead of heading it, he sort of fly kicked the ball and it just went out of play. And we were just like, oh man, this is Perez in a nutshell though. And this is why he keeps getting in the team, and rightly so. You think back, as you just said, he scored the important goal today. He scored against Stoke. Brighton last season, he was also shite. He did nout for 80 minutes. And then we got that lucky goal off Diame's arse and then back of his foot. And then Perez was there to put away from a Atsu cross again, to put away the winning goal. And you know what? What you've just said about his confidence is exactly right. He can have a bad game. He can spend 80 minutes trying things and it not coming off, trying to take players on and losing the ball. But he will still try for the last 10 minutes to continue to be there to score the goal. And that's why he never takes him off. That's why Rafa believes in him and trusts him in this position, because he is a flair player. He's got more skill than most of the players in the squad. And he really can pull stuff off. But he might try 9 times and fail. But you know you'll still attempt the 10th and he'll be there to score the goal. So even if he's having a bad game, which I don't think he was shite. I think that's harsh, but I'll take that back. But, you know, he wasn't really doing much. And you didn't think it was going to come off for him, but Rafa always trusts him, and you know he lets him finish the game, and then he gets the reward. So it's a fair play, Perez. He's done that many, many times now. He's had games where, you're right, the fans got on his back, because it's an easy thing to do when you're frustrated and haven't scored a goal. If someone loses the ball, and it looks cheap, but he's obviously trying stuff. The fans get on his back, and he deals with that, and he's confident in himself to keep going. So yeah, I do like him. I do like him. Fair play.
I'll just put in there, mate. It's interesting how like we all see the game slightly differently, because I think I turned around to you maybe, Alex, kind of midpoint of the second half, and I think I said to you, I think Perez is having a really good game. And we're both watching the same game, me and you, Si, and we've got like completely different interpretations on his performance. It's, I suppose, again, it probably just highlights how little we actually fucking know about football. Hence, neither of us are, you know, coaching at any level. No, I mean the top level. It's just really, really, really interesting, because I thought he was brilliant yesterday. So there you go.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned confidence, because confidence is something I wanted to talk about. Both for Perez and Gale, and also the team. One of the key things that we were worried about, and we talked about on the preview last week for patrons, was that would the team continue in the same vein of form that it finished against Southampton? 3-week break, you know, a game of three halves against these lads from Belgium the other day, and it was brilliant because you saw right at the start of that game, it was basically an extension of the Southampton game. I think we had a shot, Gale had a decent-ish attempt in the first 10 seconds of the game, and I really think you saw a confident, vibrant team in the first half, and Huddersfield really struggled to cope with this. I mean, look at the first half as a whole and the chances we had. First of all, you had Perez and Gale doing a lot of one-touch stuff to each other, which Huddersfield struggled with. Now, it didn't always come off because they're not world-class players, but the fact that they were trying these things, these one-touch passes, flicks through, that we just didn't see when the chips really were down in early winter and autumn, was brilliant to see, and Perez was an integral part of that, and he really did link up well with Gale in the first half. But I mean, off the top of my head, you had Gale, he misses the header right early doors that was flashed across him. Brilliant ball from Shelvey, brilliant touch from Gale. Fair play to the keeper for coming out and closing him down. He should have scored, he nearly did score. There's the one that he flashes over the bar when it kind of, the cross comes to him when he's not expecting it, and that we actually thought that was in. That was a kind of already celebrating moment, because he makes such a good connection with that from behind the goal. You're just expecting the ball to hit the back of the net. Did he have any other chances? You've also got him and Matt Ritchie one-on-one with the keeper, kind of bungled it through, and Ritchie takes it on, and maybe it would have been better left for Gale. Then you've also got...
He's flicked it. It's come across him and he's flicked it with his back heel. And if he just got a little bit more...
Yeah, that didn't even make match of the day or the extended highlights on Sky. It's crazy that. So there was that. I mean, there's also when Jonjo Shelvey's early door shot goes just wide. And it's great to see from Gale. He tries the overhead kick, which again is a sign of confidence. He's one of those players where he tries the overhead kick and he's straight back up onto his feet trying to get on the end of it. And he does really, really just miss out by a second. So he literally could have had 4 or 5 in the first half. And listen, I'm his biggest fan because he's just scored so many goals for Newcastle that have made me a very happy person. But last season, obviously. But the goals will come for Dwight Gale. And you know what? I'm excited to see Slimani. And I think Slimani's a better footballer than Dwight Gale. You know, I have to be honest. You know, one of them cost 10 million for a Division 2 side, us, and one cost 30 million for a Champions League team at the time. But I still think Dwight Gale's got a lot to offer, and I still think his first half yesterday was kind of, when he is getting chances, the team are playing well. And I know that's obvious because he's a striker, but when he's kind of busy, when he's making runs across the defenders like he was for the header or the back heel, and when the players are in good positions down the flanks to feed the ball into him and create those chances, then we're doing something right. It was a bit of a strange one though, like second half, we just didn't really seem to come out. So what do you think happened there?
Well, I think we started to run out of ideas, you know, when 70 minutes has gone, and as you've just described, we had so many chances and it wasn't coming off. Like, you could see the heads start to drop a little bit in terms of it's not going to happen today, and we started talking about this probably going to be 0-0 this, and the players maybe start to think that as well, and the crowd, I'm not going to have a go at the crowd, but you could sense the frustration because I think everyone turned up expecting we'd have romped for another 3-0 like we did against Southampton, but you know, it never works out like that. But there was a bit of, and it was a cold, cold day. So the crowd was, I think, if you listen to the Matchday Pod, as the commentary from us goes on,
do people get the Matchday Pod?
On Patreon.
Yeah.
link in the description of the podcast. I think the frustration was there from the players, from the bench probably as well. Rafa looked like he was getting more and more animated as the game went on, and as chance after chance didn't go in, and we started running out of ideas, and that's when the subs came on to change the game. So. You know what you've just said about Gale though, just like keeps getting up, keeps going, just like Perez, They are Rafa Benitez in a nutshell. These players who probably anywhere else playing for Pardew miss two chances, probably give up, probably just stop trying. Under Rafa, he's constantly straight off his bench. You know, I think there was a point where Gaylor just missed a chance and Rafa runs to the touchline and says, get up, back the halfway line. He just constantly gets them believing in themselves, like another one will come, another chance will come, and that's just how Newcastle United are now, and it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to Kennedy. I know you discussed him earlier. 5 assists. He's only played about half an hour for.
Yeah, that's like, incredible.
5 assists, which is class. And he's also should have had a pen yesterday. I've seen the highlights. First half, player gets none of the ball, takes him out. We've got unlucky there. Shock, not getting a pen. Newcastle United, while Brighton and Palace both got pens yesterday. Fucking surprise, surprise. Just some stats, and I can't take credit for these because I was going to look at these stats, but then Mark Douglas, editor of the Evening Chronicle, who is your best man for stats on Newcastle United, posted on Twitter last night that we are 9 points better off that after 32 games, or 31 games, 31? 30, 31 games, than we are at the same stage in the relegation season. Yeah. And we nearly stayed up then. And obviously I'm going to talk about now, you know, always safe from relegation, but 9 points better off is huge, considering some of the misfortune we've had as well. And the fact that, you know, as we said, that season we were well stocked in the transfer market with not the right players. But yeah, well done, Newcastle, for that. The last time we lost to a team below us in the league was September the 24th at Brighton. That's a phenomenal record. We are top. We've taken, 29 points from the bottom half of the Premier League in 15 games, or the teams below us in 15 games, which is just, like, insane form. And, you know, we've got the third lowest goals conceded of all the teams in the Premier League in 2018, which is just a defensive miracle. I mean, Charlotte, one of Charlotte's talking points was going to be that she reckons we need one more win to be safe. Went down to 38 points. I think it was 37. But anyway, 37 points. Whilst the table looks like that won't happen this year, I don't think we're totally safe now unless we get one more win, which we should get. Norman, do you agree with that one?
Are we safe?
Well, what we got left? 7 games, right? Yes. 7 games left. Like the benchmark, the fucking figure that's always bandied around year on year is 40 points. There's no way we're not going to pick up 5 points from 7 matches. Like it's not going to happen. We had that shitty spell when Lascelles was out to say that 9 game streak where we didn't, you know, we picked up 1 point, I think. And that's not going to happen again. We're not going to go through the next 7 games like losing 5 of them. That's just not going to fucking happen. One more win, 38 points would be enough, I would think. I think Southampton and Stoke are looking finished. And even Swansea are looking very poor. Like, I think we all kind of thought would happen once Carvalhal's bump ended, which seems to be the case now. Huddersfield are going to struggle. It would be catastrophic if we got relegated now, and it would also be completely against the grain of Rafa's career. It would be a fucking huge shock. I mean, you know what? The best place to check is the bookies. And what are the odds they offer on us getting relegated? That'll be indicative of what the reality is. It must be like 50-1. It's just not going to happen. Of course, we're not safe mathematically, but kind of psychologically and, you know, and realistically, yeah, we're going to be fine. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's two things. With Rafa Benitez, you know, there could be a bit of complacency set in where the lads think the job's done, but with Rafa Benitez, you know, that's not going to happen. But you just said that there's 7 games left, and whereas maybe a few weeks ago or back in February, we're talking about, obviously, the Huddersfield and Southampton games, but then we're talking about the West Brom game, and those are the ones to target points from. Of the last 7 games now, you're not just looking at West Brom and thinking, well, that's where we'll get our last 3 points. You're looking at Everton away and thinking we'll get something there. You're looking at Leicester away and thinking we'll probably get something there. You're looking at Arsenal at home, Chelsea at home, and you're thinking, we're going to get something there. And suddenly you're looking at all these games and thinking, we're probably going beaten and finishing the top half because that's how good we are at the minute.
Well, that is one of the questions at Jeff_NUFC asks, what are the realistic possibilities of a top 10 finish? And you've got to say it's not far away because Watford and Bournemouth, there's nothing to fear from those two teams. I mean, Bournemouth are in good form. Watford can't win away from home. And I think me and Bolland did a patron show through the week, which is a Premier League predictor, where we predicted every single Premier League result in the relegation battle. We both had us finishing 10th, and that was with me trying to be negative, thinking, oh, well, I can't just say we'll win every week. To answer Norman's question, Newcastle are 40-1 to be relegated, whereas Stoke are 4-11, Huddersfield are evens, and Southampton are evens, or 11-10. Swansea 6-1. So yeah, I mean, 40-1 would be a huge waste of money. Doesn't matter what odds were, because we're not getting relegated. But yeah, that definitely seems to be the thinking amongst a lot of the fan base. I'm sure Rafa will have the lads ahead of a difficult game at Leicester next week. We're all going to that. Well, me, sign Norman R. Charlotte as well, Mickey too. And yeah, that's a hard game. Leicester in good form. Jamie Vardy's on fire. But you know, a point there would be a huge result. Keep the unbeaten run going. But you know, we're certainly not expecting any miracles. But definitely amongst the fan base, we seem to have relaxed. We seem to have accepted that we're going to be a Premier League side next year, and there is the potential for this football club and this team with this manager to do great things in this league next season, if given even just a bit of money, not 150 million quid, but even if Rafa was given like a reasonable Premier League budget, 60 to 80 million pounds, including player sales, because we'll probably get rid of some deadwood, bring some money in, you have a feeling that we could seriously challenge the top. Certainly the top eight, in my opinion, if not more, with this manager. And that's the great and terrifying thing, that this could all be thrown away in the summer by one man. But I'll get back to the positivity.
Just quickly on that, though, Rafa's a very smart man, and he will know that every position in the Premier League means a few more million he might be able to spend. So you'll be thinking that, you know, there'll be no foot off the gas at any point. There'll be no job done here. There'll be how high up can we finish, get a bit more money in. It might help him make a decision if he knows that even if Ashley doesn't back him, at least the club will have generated enough money for him to do what he wants to do. And if that's the case, that might be another factor in why he could stay.
Can I just jump in there as well? I think you mentioned it, Si, a couple of minutes ago, that yes, we are on 35 points. Yes, it's very unlikely we're going to get relegated. But the other thing is as well, even if we were fucking safe now, right, even if we had, like, let's say, 40 points in the bag, Benitez isn't the kind of manager, and the coaching staff that he's got aren't the kind of coaches that would allow one split second of complacency to seep in. Like, even if players, like, kind of subconsciously switch off because, like, it's kind of, you know, job done, it just wouldn't be tolerated. It would not be tolerated by the manager and his coaching staff. And the other thing is, as well, is even if, as I say, we were safe and the players could quite easily switch off, I don't think they would, because I don't think any player on that team at the minute wants to risk losing their place in the side. I just, as long as Benitez is manager of this club, I don't envisage complacency ever being a problem. So even if we get we get 4 points in the next two games and we're completely safe, I still think the last five games of the season, the team will still be giving hell for leather. I don't doubt it. And it's fucking great to see, by the way.
Yes, it is, and I'm going to go to some listener questions now. Hail to the King at Shot Shy said, Lejeune, this is for you, Norman. How completely he ran the game in the first half, something no other centre-back in our squad can do, and few around the rest of the league. Would you agree with that sentiment, that he's that special in terms of his ability on the ball to dictate play?
He's a very, very good footballer. He's looked so good. Like, he's really coming to his own alongside Lascelles. The understanding they've built is just absolutely fantastic. But obviously, in terms of football and ability, what he can do with the ball, Lejeune is obviously better than Lascelles. You know, in that sense, he can pass the ball better. He can spot space better. He's a centre half as Lascelles is, but he's a completely different type of footballer. They're both excellent in their own way, and they're complementing each other fantastically. And that kind of Dubravka with Lejeune and Lascelles in front of him, that is a fucking solid unit right there. A really intelligent, hard-working, solid unit. And you can see the proof's in the pudding. Look how we've been since Lascelles has come back, and since him and Lejeune started working well, and since we got Dubravka. I mean, Dubravka hasn't conceded a home goal yet. And apart from against Manu, he hasn't even looked like conceding one. And I think that's just that kind of... That threesome there are just excellent. That automatics, and I don't think as long as those three are fit, I don't think we'll have many occasions where we concede more than one goal in a game. He was excellent, no doubt about it.
Simon, match of the day. The performance of Shelvey in particular was picked up on. Message from Bedford Mag here. Here's one. The fact that John Joe is a pass master, why can't he shoot for shit? I swear he couldn't hit a cow's arse with a banjo when shooting. But also, let's talk about him in a positive light.
Yeah, why can't Shelvey shoot? I don't want to answer that question. I think he can.
Do you?
You know what? Yeah, well, he was close yesterday, that one distance shot he had. He plays very deep, so Shelvey's shots are always coming from quite far out. So you've got to give him that. It's not his game, obviously. We know that. I think we talked about it yesterday on the match day.
Could you imagine if he added goals to his game?
Yeah, Selby? I know. It would be world class. But he was picking up the ball quite deep again yesterday. You know, Huddersfield had 11 men behind the ball on the halfway line, so the easiest thing for Shelby to do was come quite deep, pick up the ball. He wasn't really under any pressure and start picking out passes. And you know what? If he ever is in a position to shoot, it's because the ball's kind of ricocheted out from across and dropped to him. It's never that easy to hit them. You know, he's not Steven Gerrard, but I think it's just, yeah, I'd love to see him score more goals, but what he's doing for the team is more than enough as far as I'm concerned.
Go on, Norman. Sorry, no, you continue. I just wanted to butt in and say something about Shelby, but I interrupted you and I apologise wholeheartedly for it.
Well, the thing is, so polite. You can't talk about Shelby currently without also talking about Diarmé, because the pair of them as a centre midfield is probably the best performing centre midfield in the league at the minute. They're just so good together. Shelby gets so much more time and freedom to play his game because Mo Diarmé was there. I mean, yeah, Aaron Moy, he did work at the home leg in August. You know, he ran the show and he was very good and he scored the winning goal. He was terrified of Mo Diarmé yesterday. Every time he picked up the ball, even on the halfway line, even in his own half, Mo Diarmé was on his heels immediately. And he basically had to find a pass back to his fullback or pass 4 yards back to a centre-half or either side of him. He couldn't do anything. But then when Shelby got the ball, it was a totally different game. Like, it was just two bald men couldn't have had more contrasting performances if he tried. Like, it was just amazing. And yeah, Shelby and Diarmé once again, absolutely pivotal in the way we're playing.
Norman, go on then, say what you need to say about Shelby.
It's his how fit he is. I don't know if either of you picked up on it, but his fitness levels are at such they're so high at the moment that he even seems to be moving around the pitch quicker. It's almost like he's added a yard of pace. I mean, he's not quick by any stretch of the imagination, but what I mean is he's box to boxing. Like, I've never seen him, and I don't think there'll be any point in his career so far that he's been this fit, and it's just brilliant to see. And again, it's down to coaching, it's down to the instilling of like self belief, and obviously it's down to having a regular midfield partner like Mo Diarmé, who is just an absolute fucking perfect foil for him. So I just really good to see Shelby like that, and also, and I'm trying not to speak too soon, yeah, because you know, but he's really reined in that kind of niggly, stupid, immature side of his game that we've seen and that we saw at the start of the season. He's been utterly transformed since sort of the West Ham match away. He's really kind of, and obviously, you know, he might have one eye on possibly making the England squad for the World Cup. And as Danny Murphy said last night, there is no other English centre midfielder can give what he can. And it would be kind of cowardly of Southgate not to take him. I mean, to me, it doesn't make any difference. Obviously, part of me would like to see a Shelby play in the World Cup because he's in Newcastle. That'd be great to see him do well. But at the same time, if he doesn't get on, then well, you'll have a full pre-season under his belt. You'll come back even better next year.
Yeah, spot on. And on Mo, there aren't many more words I can say about his performances. I've just waxed lyrical about him for so long. I think we need to start transcending the language you use on him, and like he should have an adjective or something, or like I don't know, like, you know, Ronaldo, the good one, well, the old one, the new one's quite good, but the real good one, he was like the phenomenon. Did I say that right? Phenomenon.
Not at all. You're saying
phenomenon. Yeah, that we need something like that. So
you're gonna have to pick an easier word. Than
yeah, pick an e- well, no, that I can't use that one because that's taken. We need something for Mo because he's just so good for Newcastle United. Like I've said before, he's a £30 million settled midfielder who cost £4, like playing in the Premier League at the highest level, dominating, and you call it, Si, terrifying his peers on the opposition. Aaron Moy didn't want to know yesterday until the second half, until he had to. I mean, he got booked early doors as well, which is probably out of fear. You know, so yeah, what a performance by the two of them, and it's the contrast, isn't it? I remember doing the Leicester podcast from Singapore, you know, 5 a.m. or something like that, when we got beat 3-2 at home, and just saying on the podcast with Norman, I think, that we were powder puff in centre midfield, and we were weak, and it was so unlike Rafa Benitez's side. Well, the answer was Mo Diarmé, and we saw that West Ham away was the first time he played there, and he's just been the first name on the team sheet ever since, besides the Cells.
Yeah, and quickly to finish off on Shelby, what you said about Norman, about him kind of cutting down on the stupid side of his game, I mean, in January, it sounded like he was close to the door. You know, if we could have got someone in, I think Rafa would have considered selling him because he was going through a bit of a patch where he was being stupid. And you know what? Alexander Mitrovic could take a leaf out of Shelby's book because he's totally changed his behaviour. Because at that point, I think he thought, crap, this is a good opportunity playing for Newcastle under Rafa. I don't want to lose it. And he's turned it around. And he's changed his behaviour and he's learned and he's got fitter and he's doing all the right things now. Whereas that's all Rafa wants from any of his players. And if any player with a bit of talent can do it, then why not Mitrovic, who's been playing well? You know, that's what he needs to do. If he ever wants to play for Newcastle again, he probably won't. So it doesn't matter. But you know, Shelby's the example of how all these players with bad attitudes can still make it and can still change it, because we had Ben Arfa, we had managers who couldn't deal with these players. With Rafa, give him anyone and there's a chance.
I want to talk about staying calm, and you know, that's the big thing about Rafa and the coaching staff and even the players now, is the ability to stay calm. He stayed calm when we got relegated. He stayed calm when we lost the first two games last season. He stayed calm at Leeds away and Ipswich away, and everyone said we were shite and we weren't going up because Huddersfield were this great team and we were going to win every single game in the league and catch we. He stayed calm at the start of the season when Ashley fucked us. He stayed calm when we lost the first two games of the season and went out of the cup. He stayed calm as we lost 8 of 9 in November, December. He stayed calm when he got no money to spend in January and got fucked again by Ashley. He stayed calm when we're in the relegation zone before the Man United game. And it's just going to keep happening. And that kind of ability, no stupid team selections, no Steve McLaren like putting Riviere in against Bournemouth, no Pardew like banned from the stands and going all out attack and getting done 4-0, 4-0, 3-0 by Spurs, Man United and Sunderland, like playing ridiculous attacking football when we didn't have the players to do it. No John Carver blaming the tea lady for the defeat against Sunderland. Like, this, none of this shit happens. And we've been doing the podcast in the kind of period I've just mentioned there, and it's just, there's no controversy at certainly at, you know, squad level and team level anymore. It's all at boardroom level, which there always had been. And it's just like, Rafa, you know, he said it in public, he said it to us, he said it at the Times podcast, I think, with George Culkin. We as Newcastle United just need to keep doing things the right way, and other teams will make mistakes. Other teams will appoint Pellegrino or Pellegrini. One of the two. Pellegrino. Yeah. Other teams will then get Mark Hughes in.
Yeah.
Other teams will spend 90 million quid on an unproven player from Monaco in January. Other teams will appoint David Moyes. Other teams will do all these things. As long as he's managing this football club, we will be all right. We will be, whatever we think all right is, we will be it. And it's a promising sign for the future. And we're so lucky to be sat here on a Sunday morning, April Fool's Day, sigh, for another 25 minutes. Easter Sunday, with Rafa Benitez in charge of our football club, it's still fucking class. Like, I don't care what anyone says. I don't care what happens at Leicester next week. It's still an absolute privilege to watch his sides play football. That's all I wanted to say.
absolutely bang on, mate. Yeah. Absolutely bang on.
Norman, just quickly as well, you know, I think we discussed this morning, you know, it's not just about the starting 11, is it? It's the squad. It's the strength and depth we have. It's the fact that decent players can't get on the bench. It's the fact that, you know, this is a real team that he seems to be building. And I think, I mean, you probably don't remember this, but again, in one of your WhatsApp messages last night, where you'd had one or two drinks, you said, you know, you hoped we didn't sign anyone in the summer because you just want this group of lads to stay together forever. Is that still the case?
Well, the thing is, of course, like, of course you want to, like, sign, like, players, and you want, like, Rafa to get the players that he wants, but I suppose, you know, through the sentimental fucking gush of, like, 10 pints or whatever it was, the point is that I want to see these particular players do the best they can, because they just seem to be dead fucking sound, and it's, like, as easy as that is, and, like, and, you know, and as silly as it might sound to see it, it's just the case that they're just a very likeable group of players, and I'm completely and utterly fucking in love with the squad. I really am, and I obviously, you know, I want me to go and sign players to make me a better side, but at the same time, I almost feel like I would feel sorry for anybody who kind of loses their place, because I like them all that much. So there you go, I'm crying now.
Well, with Norman in that emotional state, we'll say goodbye for this week. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It's just been a pleasure. Just haven't been able to think about Newcastle United at the moment. Just fucking mint. Like, these are the days. These are the absolute beautiful days. If you like what we do, subscribe to our extra content on Patreon. It's only like $1.25 a week, and we'll spend all the money on the new gear, which we are speaking into you now, on a massive, super powerful PC through expensive microphones, which, you know, the people who subscribed has given us the money to do. We'll be back for you with the next free podcast next Sunday when we get back from Leicester. Who knows what time that will be? We might record down there in the morning. We'll see how hungover we are from the impending victory. And yeah, thank you to Si and Norman. Give us a follow on social media if you are so inclined. We're at TF Weekly Pod with Facebook and Twitter. And we will speak to you very soon. Cheers.